Six Figure Developer Podcast. I am John Calloway.
And I'm Clayton Hunt.
And with us today, we have Sarah Hant. Sarah is a regular speaker for technology audiences. She's the founder of Spark Growth, BS Hand Group, and organizer behind the 3.0 Leader Conference. She has a diverse business development background across public and private sector enterprises. Welcome, Sarah.
Hi, John. Hi, Clayton.
So, Sarah, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and the types of things you're interested in?
So I think John Clayton, what most of my friends will say about me is they know that Sarah wants to work with cool people on cool projects that make a difference. And so somebody said, oh, that's really broad in general. And I'm like, no, it's not. A lot of people do things that are boring. So one of the reasons I love like the talk that you're, the podcast series, these things that you're doing is, and what I love about working with technology professionals and you've heard me say this, is when I walk into a room with developed technology professionals, people that have experience, you can build anything. So it's like, what to me, it's like walking into a holodeck. If I can help you understand how to ask better questions to get better answers, build those real scalable solutions to needs that are validated in the marketplace, and help you understand that it takes a team to really be successful, you can do anything, whether that's just doing it as a community endeavor or whether that's building a business that could be highly profitable. It's simply helping you ask better questions. And so to me, that's the cool part, is working with great people who can do anything, asking wonderful questions and figuring out how do we make a difference in the world, whether that's at a community level, whether that's in somebody's life, having an impact, or whether that's, you know, do we think we can change the world? And I believe that we can, one person at a time, one product, one service.
So with that, what are the types of things that you help individuals and companies and organizations with?
So when we met originally at the Microsoft MVP and Regional Director Connect event, I believe in Orlando. And I was asked as a community influencer to do the topic on brand you. And I think that's one of the things that I start with, is that if you don't know who you are, someone will tell you who you should be as an individual, as a company. So the first thing is to say, what do I really care about? What's really important to me? And to know that there's no wrong answers for your business, only wrong answers for your life. So I'd say, you know, I have a company that I worked with. Founder is an MVP, a Microsoft MVP, and I was brought into this company to help them figure out how to grow. And so we looked at value propositions of similar company owners that had, or company owners that had the similar type skills, and identified. So this company is growing really quickly, and they have hundreds of employees, and this company is about medium size, but this is the culture for there. And we compared, and in talking to the founder, saying, who do you want to be? And then helping build a trajectory for company growth based on what the culture and the goals were. So you can, today's world, you can have a similar value proposition, you can be hugely successful, and you can have your company be whatever size that you want. So when you first start, it's really important to understand, what do you want for your life? What do you want for the company that you're going to build or the product that you're going to develop? And then put that plan in place. And it's just like what you guys do on a regular basis. You deploy it. And so I think that's another key piece, is helping people transfer those skills that you do every day in one area of your life and move those over into another area of your life and increase outputs, performance, and your success by just moving something. You know, I jokingly say one of my favorite math terms is phase shift. you know, moving this here over to the next place. Same stuff, different day. Same stuff, different place.
So how did you get involved in working with technologists and entrepreneurs and the like?
So when I was in school, I was, National Merit Scholar, literary person. I was going to go to, that was what my track was going to be, being a journalist, a literary major. And somehow things changed and I ended up doing something else. And along the way, I had to take this computer class. And understand, I'm a little bit older. And so at that time, it was that mandatory class you have to take before you graduate. And somewhere in that process, I went, wow, I really love systems. This is really cool. And thinking that, I could be a systems design person. And then but it was only one class and there were lots of things that happened. And then later on, as life goes on, I had more opportunity to be able to work with technology. And in today's world, it impacts absolutely everything that we do. And then there was this community initiative that I somehow got engaged in. I had a friend say, hey, can you make a few phone calls? And that's initially how our bar camp started, was making a few phone calls. And, 9 years later. And so through that initiative, I became more connected to technology professionals. And as a systems and process person, it was really a place that I felt at home. In contrast to some of my other friends in business development and in the incubation space that work with entrepreneurs, they're somewhat, they don't necessarily know what to do with technology professionals or developers. And like I said, to me, that's my favorite place. You can make anything. You're highly creative. You have this left and right brain combination that tends to throw many people off, but you can make anything. One of my favorite projects was deploying an organizational chart, identifying the whole piece of growth and then animating it. So like any other type of app, we created this animated application that a company could figure out, what types of projects you would need at what time, what talent, was it more DevOps, was it more this or that? What would the compensation be? What would the benefits? So it's a great tool in helping somebody grow a business. So I think for me, it's an exciting creative space that the limitations are only what you might have.
What in your background helps you with helping other people with their brand identity and growing professionally?
I have kind of an interesting background, Clayton. Part of that is in professional sales training, business development. And part of that is that I have a master's degree in clinical counseling, specializing in marriage and family and addictions recovery. So my team jokingly says, I'm actually licensed to screw with your core beliefs.
So how did you come from like a family counseling background and end up in a technology space or helping technologists?
So I think what was really interesting for me is I'd been involved in sales and business development across a lot of different industry sectors, from Disney-like animatronics, mitigation, recovery, a lot of different things. And when my children were small, I went back to school to finish my degree, and I chose to do that in clinical counseling. And as things changed, the economy crashed, and there was all this talk about anxiety and what people were dealing with and this stress. And I said, I really think there's a value proposition that I have here, and that is that I understand business development. I've been doing sales training, a lot of different things in that area, but what I can do that other people can is help people manage their mindset. And so there's a talk that I started doing a couple of years ago for entrepreneurs, and actually I did it at a technology conference, and it's called The Entrepreneurial Wall, Where Dreams Are Made or Broken. And so if you look at images on the entrepreneurial path, it looks like this very severe roller coaster. One day you're exhilarated and you're on the top of the mountain and everything's wonderful. And the next day you're like, oh my gosh, could it be any worse than this? And the key thing for an entrepreneur is we know that those ups and downs are going to happen. We know that there's going to be challenges, you're going to have to change. And so the key piece is managing your mindset, dealing with adrenaline, managing to have some sort of equilibrium as a therapist. That's part of what we help people do. And so when I first launched my consulting company in that, people would say, you know, so are, you know, what makes you different from a coach? And I would say, my thesis. But at that time, I worked kind of across those borders. And so I would tell clients, you could write me off as working with me off as a business expense, or I could give you the correct DSM, the diagnostic medical coding, and you could submit it to your insurance company. And so which was very true. As time went on, I really didn't have that many clients who chose to go that route. But that piece of anxiety and stress, you know, when you look at that, that 2007 to 2010 era, the depression, anxiety that high level professionals were dealing with was pretty extreme. There's a lot of documented evidence on it. And so that's really when I launched into kind of that whole life work. And as I did that, I met more entrepreneurs, more people that were looking for funding. Through that, I got involved with, started going to some things that were in the funding arena, ended up being the chapter president for Angel Investor Network, which you want to talk about the coolest stuff is to be able to hear companies pitch on some of the newest technologies that are coming out. We were laughing the other day because my partner went to a smart cities event in National Smart City Conference in D.C., and he comes home and pick him up from the airport, and we're talking about this project that we're working on. He goes, oh, I met the global head of smart cities for such and such a company. And I went, oh, I know him. And he's like, well, how do you know him? And I'm like, well, I heard him pitch 5 years ago. He pitched, he had this great company, his company was acquired. Then he was brought in as his company acquired into this other company. And now he's leading their smart cities chart.
I caught your presentation at Tampa Code Camp this past weekend, where you were talking about startups, facts, and fantasies. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Yes. The reason that I do the Startup Facts and Fantasies is that there are a lot of things people think about starting a business and how it works, which aren't true. For example, I have $1 million idea. I just need to find an investor. And, you know, we say that lots of people have ideas. They happen in the shower. People don't pay for ideas. They pay for people that are going to implement. And
but I have a napkin right here.
We all know somebody that has said, oh, I can, you know, there's this some kind of success, and they go, oh, I had that idea. That was my idea. I should be the one making the money. No, if you didn't do anything with it, it doesn't matter. It's about implementation. It's about actually making things happen. And so that's one of the places we start up with Startup Facts and Fantasies. And then one of the other things is really market research. I can't tell you some of the things people think just because it's, you know, I tell people market research is not the first page of Google. It's really identifying what is the competitive landscape, what's out there, what makes you go back to brand you uniquely valuable. You know, are you going to compete on price? So those are all different things about you think you have an idea. Well, the marketplace doesn't care what you think. They reward financially products or services, entities that provide value. So if you can't figure out how to provide value, it doesn't matter how good you think your idea is.
Yeah, I've recently gotten on a kick of watching the Shark Tank reruns, and the amount of advice and information that the sharks give to the individuals or the groups that are pitching their ideas are just is incredible to me. And they really kind of drive home the point of having a, not just having an idea, but having executed on that idea, not just having a product, but having a business and having a business model that can grow and be sustained. Are those the types of things that you are typically talking about or coaching on? What are the facts and fantasies that come up often that you need to adjust people's perceptions on?
So we talk about one of the first things I say is beside after branding and unique value proposition is talk about what's the difference between a job and a business. And people will say, well, a job is when you work for somebody else and a business is when you work for yourself. However, the truth is that a job is where you trade time for dollars. And a business is a vehicle that allows you to trade intellectual property for dollars. A business is something that has systems and processes in that can produce revenue even when you are not present. A business is something that has something in it that's repeatable, sustainable, as you said, John, scalable, that you can grow, and transferable, that you can exit. Now, when you first start a business, there's a lot of work. And you may be trading time for dollars as you move through that, but it changes. You know, the question is, how do you make more money, become more valuable, solve bigger problems? So one of the facts and fantasies is people think that starting a business means you work for yourself. Well, you don't. You work for all your customers. You know, just like if you have a restaurant, you don't get to say, oh, I just don't feel like doing this. Sometimes you have to do things that you don't want to do. So that piece of the technician who just wants to work for themselves, and they're going to have this incredible freedom, and they think, well, if I start a business, I'll get to do just what I love. Well, starting a business, you also get to do bookkeeping and marketing and all the things you may not love. And so in that startup facts and fantasies, the thing is, asking that question, if you like security, if you don't like that up and down, if you don't know how to deal with fear, you should probably work for somebody else. And if you want to be in that startup world, find a startup that's far enough along that they can pay you, in contrast to assuming the risk the same way as when you start a company. So that's a big one that people miss. So I'm just going to start my own company and I'll work for myself and forget the man. The other part is in funding, being able to identify that there's different types. There's customer funding, there's friends and family. Early entrepreneurs use interchangeably the words angel and venture capital, not the same deal at all. So understanding what actually, if you do need to pursue funding, what type of business growth do you need to have? What are the things that investors would look for? Investors, they're not looking for a lone ranger, and they typically expect you to be investing. You know, so if you're working on a company kind of part-time and you still have your full-time gig and you're still, you know, getting your regular paycheck, you're like, oh, I want you to give me money so that I can afford to leave my job, my security, and I'm going to pay myself from the money that you give me. Well, then you don't have any skin in the game. You're not assuming part of the risk. And you go, why would an investor assume all the risk with their money if you're not assuming part of the risk as a founder and still think that you're going to get a big reward? So there's a lot of things in there that entrepreneurs don't know, that whether they're a technology professional or not, that if you want better answers, ask better questions. So the goal in speaking in those environments is, I think I said before, you can make anything. You can build solid technology solutions. So if we build those on the right platform, not meaning a technology platform, we build those on the platform of an idea or a need in the marketplace. And we know how to put together a team. Understand it takes a team fully implement something, we put those right things in place. You can never say that getting funding is easy, because it's not necessarily, but if you put the right things in place and you package it correctly, then the potential for getting funding to grow and scale is much better.
Let's say I wanted to start a business. Where would I start? Is there any kind of checklist that I could walk through to get me started with the limited hassle?
So I would say, so first, Clayton, you want to start a business. It really would depend. Do you just want to, it, and this is what I would say. So do you just want to start a business? Do you have an idea for a business? I have one entrepreneur that comes to speak for us sometimes, and he said, I had one business that lasted 20 minutes. He had this idea. Now, he's built multiple companies, and so he knows what he's looking for in a company that has growth and what he thinks that would look like. So he had this great idea. He went online, began to research it, saw some stuff out there, and went, wow, I don't think so. That's not going to be a fit for me. So that company idea lasted for 20 minutes. So if the beginning is really, do you want to start a business because it's about a lifestyle choice? You want to make some changes? So that's really where you start. Why? So if you have an idea, then you want to do some market research. See what's out there. Is it a marketplace that's completely flooded with a lot of different types of that product or service? And not saying that there can't be anybody doing something. I think I was saying this weekend that one of my other entrepreneurs I work with says he never wants to be the first one to the marketplace. He wants to be second or third, because when you're looking at a new idea, that first person has to educate the consumer that there's even this solution there. And sometimes that first part takes a lot more money and a lot more effort and time to educate the consumer that this idea is even there, that there's this possible solution. So he likes to come in second or third, let somebody else be bleeding edge. So if you have an idea, you know, if it's about a lifestyle, then you're figuring out, where is there a need in the market? If it's an idea, you're figuring out, what is the competitive landscape? What is out there, and how would what I want to bring to the marketplace be uniquely valuable and different? So those are the places. And then it's like, you know, if this, then that. So let's say there really is a need in the marketplace, and you've identified that what you would provide is uniquely valuable, and you can see how this looks. Well, you want to have an entity. You want to have an entity. You want to begin to look for some other talent. Maybe you're the developer aspect, but you know you're going to need some graphic art type talent that you might not have. So you're going to begin to look like, what are the talents that would be needed to bring this to fruition? When you get your company entity, and depending on how this talent you're going to organize, you want to have really good organizational agreements. Because one of the worst things in the world is to bring a couple of really good friends together and everybody's really excited. This happens a lot in the hackathon journey. Now, I tell people, if you want to find out what companies are looking for, and there's a whole another section on corporate innovation and startups and that whole type of piece. But if you want to know what some of the larger companies are looking at in how they want to see their technologies deployed, research hackathons. I have a couple of friends that have done well in the hackathon environment, and you can see the technologies that they provide that they want you to use, whether it's a Cisco or an SAP or an AT&T or whoever it is. You can see they have these certain technologies that they lay out, and they have certain challenges. So you can use that to identify needs in the marketplace. But the whole hackathon piece or the startup weekend, and I've seen this happen with a couple of different friends, and I'll use the startup weekend as an example. And there was a couple of our friends that were involved. We were actually judges for a startup weekend in Tampa Bay. And there were about five or six people on the initial team that did the prototype for this type of application. And everybody was all, yay, this is awesome. Well, out of that team of like five or six people, four of the people really weren't interested in continuing. Well, two of the guys said, hey, we think this has value. And so there's, we would see them at the Starbucks on Kennedy and West Shore having their company meetings. You know, they initially they still had their regular day jobs and they're working and they're coding and they're working on this. Eventually they quit those. From startup weekend to acquisition was 21 months. Now, there were those other three or four people on the initial team that were part of that prototyping and, you know, very minimal viable product that came out of startup weekend, but they didn't have the desire to put in the hard work to move forward. Now, if they had all entered into a business entity as equal partners, then you would have had these three to four people that dropped off, but they still would have gotten the same reward. And the little red hen says that doesn't work. If you don't plant and participate, you don't get to reap the same rewards. So in that part of finding a team, you want to make sure that you have not just a legal entity. So you can go to SunBiz and it's not very expensive to get that. But when you're developing something that you're really going to invest in, it's not something that you're just building cool stuff because it's cool, but you really think this is going to be a viable business, get a really good organization. When you go into business with somebody, you are, let's say you have one of the people and they pass away. Well, now you're in business with their spouse or their mother. And so those organizational agreements, talk about it, it's this whole premarital or a business. Actually, our lawyer, Peter Nealis, also spoke at Code Camp this last weekend and was saying that going into business together, working, taking on an investor, that can be harder to dissolve than a marriage. So you really want to think about that and make provision. It's not like saying that I don't trust John. It's saying, John, stuff happens in life. So we really believe that this is going to be an awesome venture. We think there's an incredible amount of potential. Because we do that and we care about one another, we want to put thought into how we would move forward. There's always option, but it's really when you know who you are, because if you don't, someone will tell you who you should be. You put together a really good team, talk about what it really looks like to go forward. You identify kind of where you're going. You know what the competitive landscape is. And you understand that there's different types of ways to fund that. Initially, you may be bootstrapping, which means that, hey, everybody on the team is sucking it up and putting some money in. You may work with some friends and family. I tell people, if you can't convince your mom to give you money, and then, you know, understanding that piece of debt or equity. Equity meaning somebody's going to take some ownership in your company. Those are all different questions. But the first thing is really seeing, is there a need? And then figuring out those first things at the beginning. When you get those things right, and you do that research, that's a great foundation.
Do you have any other upcoming speaking engagements or other announcements you'd like to share?
We are entering, November. November, according to some people, is really Entrepreneurship Month. But the week before Thanksgiving every year is Global Entrepreneurship Week. There are millions of people around the world that will be celebrating entrepreneurship. So there's going to be all kinds of events. We'll actually be working, we're working with an organization that's moving into the Tampa Bay area called SeedSpot, which is an accelerator that helps support impact entrepreneurs and investors. So that's coming up November 9th and 10th at the University of Tampa. So we're looking for entrepreneurs who are interested in participating, having that opportunity of feedback, mentors. We have in our own world, we have an event at Station 2 in November, which is our Tech Talk Days. That's November 18th. It's a Saturday. It's different than our code camps because it's more of an aggregated learning type experience. So you get to hear people across all different sectors. We don't manage all the different rooms. We have our Da Vinci's Fair coming up in February, which is a way cool day. That's February 10th, with drones and robots, makers and 3D printers and tech talks. And Microsoft comes and they fill a room with Kinects and they bring Oculus Rift. Maybe we'll get the Halo lens this year, which would be really cool. So that we consistently have lots of different things that are going on. And most of those were either we're simply facilitators or sometimes we're speaking. I have an event coming up Tuesday, December 12th that I'm doing. It's a luncheon event here at the station, and that is called Project Process Product. Are you leaving money on the table? And so that's because if you do something once, it's a project. If you do it more than once, you should develop a process. And if you continue to do it, there is probably money hidden in there in a service or a product offering. So that's kind of a fun one that I really enjoy. And that's December 12th at lunchtime at the station. So, and those, there's no cost for those. That's actually a community event that we do every.
All right, Sarah, thanks so much.
You're welcome, John. Thank you.
That was Sarah Hand. Sarah is a regular speaker for technology audiences. She is founder of Spark Growth, the S Hand Group, and organizer behind the 3.0 Leaders Conference. She has a diverse business development background across public and private sector enterprises. This has been the Six Figure Developer Podcast. I am John Calloway.
And I'm Clayton Hunt. We'll be right back.